Yesterday talked about gladdening the mind, the next stage in Anapanasati is concentrating the mind. The samadhi, and that is actually the word that's used, samadhahams, in the sutta. So talking about samadhi, concentrating. I you tend to like to rely on the Thai translation of this word, which means more like establishing firmly. So if establishing the mind firmly, and particularly when we're using it in conjunction with the breath, just establishing the mind firmly as one breathes in, establishing the mind firmly as one breathes out. This sense of really pulling the mind together, one pointing, focusing, purifying, in order for it to settle, the mind needs to be purified of the coarser elements, needs to relinquish the coarser elements that tend to agitate and stain the mind, so that intent on that purification, I almost hesitate in using that word because it's sometimes it seems very, very strong, and also the kind of in the English language that kind of puritanical aspect of the word purification. But it's important to recognize that we need to cleanse the mind of the elements that stain it, in the same way that when we do the just our observance day cleanup of the hall. I mean, we clean the windows so we can see through them. That's otherwise they pick up dust and dirt. So that purification, settling of those things that are within the mind that are kind of that are incongruous to peace, draw attention to those elements, so settling, concentrating, one pointing, focusing, making the mind malleable, making the mind very pliant, and this is where, say, that gladdening the mind is also helps the mind to become very pliant and malleable. There's a softness that it's not because the mind isn't firmly established, but it doesn't have those hard edges to it that are strident, that are driven. There's a malleability to it that is very important. That in concentrating the mind, we need to know how to bring those balance to the mind, so that there's this sense of settling. And taking the breath as the object is a learning how to take that breath and allow the mind to engage in the sensation of the breath and the perception of the breath. Because there's at some point there's a, you know, as the mind starts to settle, then the actual sensation becomes, you know, a bit indistinct or not so clear. And that, you know, as long as that's coming from the mind settling and not needing to attend to that, to the sensation so clearly, then that, you know, that is a natural process. I mean, sometimes the indistinctness can be one of the hindrances, but at this point, this isn't what we're sort of talking about or using as a basis. The mind is gladdened, is bright. And I think one of the descriptions or words that Ajahn Brahma Wangso uses is very, very useful. Let's say, the beautiful breath. For the mind to really concentrate and settle, it has to. There's this need for the mind to delight in the object or feel a sense of, you know, warmth and friendliness to the breath, and the breath becomes one's friend, one's companion. And so this sense of the beautiful breath, as the breath as it's coming in, to really delighting in this, the beauty of that sensation and that moment of being with the breath. And as one breathes out, the beautiful breath being the foundation, and then sort of that sense of its being, you know, say, beautiful, being benign, being benevolent, the breath really being something that is something that one is relying on, and it brings beauty into the heart. And so we breathe in, and just allowing that to suffuse the mind as one breathes out. Just allowing that to suffuse the mind, this beautiful breath. And this is where both the allowing the mind to concentrate on that, and also, you know, just maybe directing attention to it in that way, bringing up that perception. And also in that sense of the sensation of the breath, sometimes may be less distinct as the mind starts to settle and there's this peaceful, but there's the perception of the breath, and particularly that the perceiving of the breath as it comes in and goes out, and in its sort of in its beauty and its benevolence, so that there's a nourishing and settling of the mind. And this is, you know, working with the breath, and as the mind settles and on this perception of a beauty and benevolence, you know, what happens is, you know, the mind really enters into that perception and that feeling and the sensation, and either entering into it, the mind really, because it's welcoming, the mind sort of moves forward into that sensation of the breath, or it sort of is almost sort of subsumed into the, that sensation, into that perception. I think different people will experience it in different ways. But just that, the main thing is that allowing that perception and sustaining attention to be suffused with that quality of benevolence and beauty. So that either it can move into the and absorb into the breath, into that sensation, or the sensation envelops the experience. So that as we working with the with the breath and concentration, firmly establishing the mind on the breath, and that is a using this base, this foundation of attention. Now it all comes back to the this is mindfulness and being very mindful. But then the mindfulness just isn't a mechanical a forcing of the mind onto the object and then results happen. It's a one has to be working with the feeling tone of it. And this is where the gladdening of the mind is a laying of the foundation for the concentrating, the settling, the one-pointing, the merging into a point, allowing a point of awareness to form, rather than the moving of attention and consciousness. There's a settling. So samadhanam, the settling of the mind on the, as the breath comes in, as the breath goes out. The word that's most often used for settling of the mind, the word jhana, is a sometimes it's the used as the equivalent of just meditation. This is what meditation is. The well-known idiom or phrase that is used by the Buddha, that you know, meditate because you know there are these roots of trees, there are these empty places. Meditate because. Lest you sort of regret the opportunity that's passed, and the word that is used is the word with jhana, and it's sometimes there's an over exalted use of the words that has a whole constellation of expectations that are coupled with that. And it's important to not get drawn into that measuring of the mind too much in the sense of attainment. One obviously has to measure the mind, but measuring the mind from the point of, is the mind at ease? Is the mind not at ease? Is the mind, say, comparing and feeling driven to attain something that that one only has a concept of? Am I trying to, compare myself to others? So and so got second jhana. I'm just a lowly first jhana. That kind of competitive comparing, measuring, is so inimical to the whole practice. But really, the mind needs to be settled, focused, steady, bright and peaceful. And it gets in the way when there is this that sense of totting up how much one is has gained or what level one has achieved. And just Ajahn Chah would always emphasize, is the mind suffering or is it not suffering? Is the mind steady or is it not steady? Is it mindful or is it not mindful? And all of these, that tendency is sort of so unmindful. It gets obstructs. To attend to what is it that allows the mind to become more peaceful and to be more clear, rather than what level did I get, or did I get anything at all? Because that's suffering right there. I didn't get it. I'm bereft. I'm missing out. I'm never going to get it. That whole line of thought, trajectory in the mind is painful. So that the whole purpose of the practice is really gladdening the mind, settling the mind, and also depending on different temperaments, there's the different ways of approaches of how one places the mind and utilizes it in order to settle it. It's not in the it's in from the commentaries, but I've always found it very useful. The sort of definition of say two different types of jhana or different two different type ways of meditating. The alamanupanicca jhana and lakkanupanicca jhana. So that they say the jhana or meditation that is using the object as the focus, and then the meditation that's using characteristics as the focus. Alamana as being an object, a mood, an object, a object of attention. So that can be the, and that's usually the how the say, divide, say samatha practice is taking an object as the focus, and vipassana is usually the taking the characteristics as a focus, or the characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta. And so that they but that still this focus of meditation, and it has a different result, but it's still a focus. So that using the object of as a focus, using the breath, using say the an image, whether it's in say an image that is inspires faith, like an image of the Buddha, or an image of of the asubha kamatan, the parts of the body, or using a kasina, a color. You know, those are objects that the mind is able to focus on and attend to and keep returning to, and it sort of there's that steadiness of the object, and then the mind keeps returning to that and settling, absorbing into that. And then the lakanupanicca jhana, the jhana of meditation of using the characteristics as a focus. One's using the a bit more analytical and discernment of these, say the okay impermanence, and there's change happening, but when rather than getting absorbed into the change and going through the objects of change, one's looking at it from the view of the these are this characteristic of change, impermanence, uncertainty, it's unsure, so that's the mind is very focused and steady, but it has a different object of attention, in the sense of the object is one of a characteristic, and then it attains peace through that insight in that and recognition and the relinquishment that comes from that. So that, and we also have to learn how to shift attention to that, because sometimes we you know, well, need to make my mind peaceful so that I can see things clearly, have enough samadhi so that I can gain insight. But the nature of the mind, or nature of desire, oftentimes what happens is, you know, how do we make that decision? When is it clear that I've got enough samadhi so that I can have insight? This desire mind is well, there's never enough samadhi. It's just the nature of desire. So there needs to be some, you know, one is using and relying on that settling and composing the mind and learning how to do that. But there's, one needs to consciously use these different modes of meditation, of say of settling, of focus, so that one takes up the mode of attending to characteristics, and then observing, well, what's the result? What is the feeling within the mind? What is its, what is its what's the result? Learning how to become skilled in applying the mind, because that the stillness of the mind is we cultivate that in order to energize the mind, to brighten it, to allow it to be more clear. But then we also have to learn how to utilize that clarity and stay with, say, an object of change, to be able to sustain attention on a characteristic with the mind of steadiness. And that's where a penetration occurs, and that's really the ability to, for the mind to really drop some of its preconceptions and basic attachments. It's when we see through, say, the aspect of and characteristic of suffering, say, or the unsatisfactory nature of things, the pervasive quality of dukkha, and we're not shaken by it, we're not moved by it. There's a steadiness that is there. It's cultivated. It's not, one needs to be having worked with these two modes of object of focus, the alamanupanichachana, lakanupanichachana. These are two ways of attending within the meditation, and they're both they're composing, they're settling, they're one pointing, they're focusing. It's just using slightly different objects of attention, or modes of attending. Now, as we sustain attention on the breath, now there are these different results that come from concentration. It's the natural result of concentration. You know, at this point, in Anapanasati, the purpose of this establishing of concentration is to really settle the mind. That's what at this point. But it's important to recognize that within the concentration, within that settling, then there's different potentials, and to become familiar with that potential. Like the Buddha talks about different results of concentration. There's the concentration that results in a pleasant abiding here and now, and that an idiom that is used in the suttas, that pleasant abiding here and now, of dwelling in meditation, peaceful meditations and settled states of consciousness, in particular the four jhanas, are, that's the description, the pleasant abiding here and now. And that's a result of concentration. And it's a a necessary it's a necessary goal to be setting for oneself. How do I abide peacefully and pleasantly in the here and now with these states of consciousness that are very positive, very bright, very very settled. And that, because it just is it rejuvenates and freshens the mind to be peaceful, to concentrate, to settle. And whatever attempt and effort that we put in toward that is, you know, it's bearing fruit. It's something that is, you know, it's a good thing. It's the inherent benefit of turning to that which is peaceful, whether or not they, or to what degree the mind is able to settle. That, you know, it still is a you know, whatever steps along the way we make, those are very fruitful, very beneficial. They give us the opportunity to really experience peace and well-being. Another result that the Buddha gives of concentration is knowledge and vision, and these are when the mind is concentrated and settled, very settled, and takes a perception of light, and takes that settled mind it's able to gain knowledge and vision into things, and it's, let's say, it's a capacity of the mind. It's just knowing that that is possible. There, a monk one of the senior forest masters, Lumpa Put, he's passed away a couple of years ago. He was really skilled in meditation. He was very skilled in various psychic powers, and but anyway, he said when he was a novice, meditating and doing his also doing his studies, his Dhamma studies, then what he would do would be to put his mind onto into states of stillness and brightness, direct attention to a question of, you know, what's going to be on the exam, and it'd come up in his mind what all the questions were that were going to be on the exams, and then he knew what to study, so then he'd never had any problems with his studies. So that he said he always, when he teaches meditation, and particularly to school groups and school kids, he always tells them that. He says, really get them motivated to practice meditation, because it has results can happen like that. One can have knowledge of such things. That it's, you know, it's a capacity of the mind. It's a possible result of concentration. Depending on the person, it can be used skillfully or not used skillfully, but it is a possibility. The third result of concentration is called mindfulness and alertness. So that one uses the concentration to then direct attention to the mindfulness and alertness of experience. Because the mind can absorb in many different ways, it has potential in for different things, and it doesn't necessarily mean just because one is the mind is able to concentrate that there is a great degree of real sharp mindfulness and alertness. And the Buddha talks of this as the mindfulness and alertness of the knowing feelings as they arise, knowing feelings as they persist, knowing feelings as they subside. Knowing perceptions as they arise, knowing perceptions as they persist, knowing perceptions as they subside, knowing thoughts as they arise, knowing thoughts as they persist, knowing thoughts as they subside. And if one just looks superficially at it, that one thinks, well, so what's the big deal? But it's obvious that the problem of being stuck in samsara is because we're actually not mindful and alert to the implications of our feelings, our perceptions, of our thoughts. And it takes a great degree of concentration, of settledness, to have that knowledge, that clear mindfulness and alertness as it's happening, as they're arising, as they're persisting, as they're subsiding. And because we're conditioned beings, and we're prey to these conditions, and the conditioning that is always going on is within that realm of the feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and we keep spinning in samsara. With these as the motivating factors, motivating forces, so that to be able to be mindful and alert to these phenomena, so that we're able to maintain and sustain this degree of clarity and presence. The last result of concentration that the Buddha talks about is the concentration which is for the ending of the asavas, of the taints, so that the and the say the mode of how that is accomplished, or the way the Buddha talks about it, is just that being able to seeing the five khandhas as, you know, this is saying, this is form, this is its arising, this is its passing away, this is feeling, this is perception, this is sankhara, this is consciousness, seeing these as just the five khandhas, and seeing this is just a khandha, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not I'm not afflicted from it from the outside of the world, this is not something that is one is creating a self view about, this is a khanda, this is form, this is feeling, this is perception, this is sankhara, this is vijnana, this is consciousness, this is its arising, this is its passing away. And that concentration, when it's directed in that way, is the concentration that leads to the ending of the asavas, ending of the taints. Now that there are these, you know, we develop the concentration, we develop the settling of the mind, and we need to be skilled and experienced in how to go about that. But then we also have to be skilled and experienced in how to use that, how to apply it, where to direct it, and there, and what's useful at a particular time. When is it useful to direct attention to a pleasant abiding here and now? When is it useful to really apply that faculty of stillness towards mindfulness and alertness? How do we direct that concentration in a way that we can be bringing the asavas, the taints, to an end? And so that this is the sort of the whole. This encompasses really all of the practice, doesn't it? It's taking. You see how this mindfulness of breathing is such a complete. Complete practice. And you start off with a sort of, okay, I've just got a short breath here, long breath there, but then it just keeps expanding and it's becoming more subtle, becoming more profound, really, in its application. So to, you know, we have the opportunity, as, you know, we're in retreat, we've got the opportunity to develop this mindfulness of breathing, and there's nothing else happening, really, so to give yourselves the opportunity to cultivate this mindfulness of breathing, and this whole ways of applying the mind are not just, you know, say when I'm sitting down watching the breath, but there's, you know, the breath is one, the breath is happening all the time with doing walking meditation, standing meditation, and even if one directs attention in a different way, not using the breath in particular, still, all of those principles are applicable. So I'll offer that for reflection this morning.